So welcome to everybody. And it seems like you already know a fair amount about the foreign measurables. But so I hope, you know, maybe you won't learn anything new this weekend, but maybe you will. We can learn from each other. And maybe, we'll enjoy the time on doing the meditations and just giving ourselves time and space to think about it. So I'm Lynn, my brief introduction. And the reason I'm here and chose this topic to do was because was introduced to these teachings very early on in my Buddhist career. And just something about them really struck me. I absolutely love them. They really resonated with me. There was one particular meditation, which we're going to do at the end of this session, or towards the end of this session, that just grabbed me, and it seemed to be, you know, summing up a bit like Leilani, I think you were saying that, what it is that Steph, you know, that Dharma's all about, really, the reason for being here, the reason for doing any of this stuff, really. And it presents it in a really straightforward way. So for my motivation for being here and for doing this particular topic, I was hoping to share my enthusiasm with the Four Immeasurables, but it seems like I will be sharing yours as well, and to give you sort of tools and experience in perhaps going a little bit deeper in yourself. Now, actually, although, you know, we have a whole weekend and there's all, you know, 5 2-hour sessions in theory, or there are 5 2-hour sessions. We will just be scratching the surface of the topic, because it is so incredibly deep. I realized when I was kind of preparing for it that, you know, I could have gone off in any number of different directions. But I'll try to keep it simple, and I'll try to keep it grounded as well, and grounded in practice. So basically, I say we've got these 5 sessions, and each session is 2 hours, but we'll break, we'll have a sort of comfort break round about the middle each time for about 10, 15 minutes, see how we go. And it will be a mix of me sharing stuff that I've been reading about or been thinking about or listening to recently around the Four Immeasurables, about around the topic. And then we'll do some meditations, and I'll guide those make suggestions. And there will also be plenty of time for discussion. And if anybody else comes, then we'll go into breakout rooms. And if nobody else does, then, well, it's up to you. We can decide at the time, but we might want to just stay all together rather than breakout rooms and come back together. But we'll play it by ear, see how it goes, if that's okay. As you know, we originally planned that we were hoping to be able to do it in situ. So in between the sessions, if you are able, if you have the facilities to be able to do that, and you're not sort of just called away to, you know, sort of with family responsibilities or anything else like that, I would suggest that you try to stay in as retreat a mode as possible, that you try to kind of keep things simple, maybe go for a walk or stretch or something like that, but try to keep your mind around the topic, whether by reading or by contemplating. And I don't know if you saw, but on the website, I think they mentioned it in the email, I put a couple of things. There's a list of resources which you can download, and that's if you want to kind of take your studies further. And I'll talk about the resources themselves towards the end of the course. But also there's a lot of quotes, a page of different quotes sort of around the topics. And I'm a great believer in quotes. I love, you know, sometimes, you know, some people just manage to get the pith of something that's really transformative. So, you know, one thing that you might want to do is just, you know, have a look at those quotes. And if there's anything that resonates with you, anything in particular, then just sit with it for a while in between times and see what kind of comes up for you. I mean, it sounds like you're all experienced meditators anyway, so you know what to do. But anyway, so that is there. And also I've put up there that's called Shantideva's dedication. So it's a dedication prayer from the 8th century Buddhist saint Shantideva, and it's based all around this notion of developing ourselves to our fullest potential, so that we can be of best benefit to the world and its inhabitants. In fact, all sentient beings from a Buddhist perspective. Again, you might want to sort of contemplate that, or if you have your own practice, and do that. But I would suggest try to keep your life, if you can, this weekend as simple and as peaceful as possible, and keep it around the topic. So the four immeasurables. Back to basics to start with, really, but again, it seems like you know, but they're qualities of heart and mind. So that we are encouraged to develop from within the Buddhist perspective. They are, you'll know them, there's loving kindness or immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. Actually, when I saw the title that we'd had on this course, it was How to Develop True Love or something, I was thinking, sounds a bit like a Valentine's Day thing. But, you know, you'll know that. And I was thinking, I think I should have called it something else like Boundless Heart or Expanding the Heart or something. But anyway, actually, when I then thought about it, I thought, no, all of these aspects are woven together to develop our love. And actually the loving kindness is the aspect of the four immeasurables that I think most people know and are familiar with. So that's okay. So loving kindness, it's not, we'll talk about it in the particular session, but it's not love in the romantic sense, obviously, but it's developing our openness, our feeling of kindness, our acceptance of all others. And all situations as well is another way we can kind of take this teaching. Universal friendliness is a word that is a way it's been translated more recently. And metta is the original Pali, so you've probably come across the Metta Sutta, which is the original language that the Buddha's scriptures were written down in. And that sutta is the Sutra on Loving Kindness, which kind of lays out the process of the meditations that follow. So compassion is fairly straightforward. Empathetic joy, again, we'll look at it closely later. And equanimity, which is, again, better slightly odd translation into English, and a better translation, I think, can be impartiality, or even better still, I think now, emotional balance. Again, we'll look at that more closely in this session, because equanimity applies a kind of a drawing back and aloofness sometime. And this definitely isn't that. It's the opposite. Immeasurable in the sense of being limitless or boundless. So limitless in the sense of, in two senses. One, in the sense of the depth to which we can develop these qualities. Buddhist teachings say that there is no limit to how far we personally, each of us individually, can develop the qualities of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, which is quite a lot to take on, actually. We tend to limit ourselves, I think, in many ways. And one of the facets that I really enjoy about Buddhism, but do find quite challenging sometimes, is the view that it has of human nature, of our potential, of my potential, that these positive qualities can be developed to a degree that is just beyond imagination. But we start small, we start where we are, and we gradually build up. But I think it's good to kind of raise, I find it helpful to raise our sights and to see what is possible. to try and identify in some way with what is said to be possible, and just go for it and see what happens, I think. Also immeasurable or limitless in the sense, and again challenging, in the sense of excluding no one. And this is where I think the first challenges come when we do these practices. You know, there are people that we're perfectly happy to extend our love, our compassion to, to share their joy. And there are plenty of people that we really would rather not, basically, in varying degrees. You know, it's a kind of a spectrum between, sort of those we're really very close to and feel we can't live without, and those, you know, we wish off the face of the planet, basically. And it's a spectrum in between. And, you know, what we're being asked to do here, or what it's suggested that we do, is that, you know, that we can develop ourselves so that nobody is excluded, not even the worst tyrant, the person who's harmed us the most, the most evil type person from, you know, throughout time, now or in the past, it is possible that we can develop a mind that doesn't exclude those people, and we'll look in more depth at that and we'll discuss that as well. But again, we take it slowly. We can't just jump straight in and think that Hitler was a great guy after all, or whatever, you know. It's there is a process going through. And it is a very well-defined, it's very precise process. It's based on teachings that have been around for at least 2,000 years, dating back at least to Buddhaghosa, in the form that they're in, the package that they're in of these four together. I'm not sure when he lived, but I think it might have been about 5th century or something like that. Can't remember now, sorry. But anyway, they've been around a long time, and the fact that they've been around and lasted tells us that people have found them useful. And, you know, in our the interactions with Buddhist teachings and teachers in particular, I'm sure we've found that there are people who can seem to embody these qualities. Maybe we've seen, again, to a greater or lesser degree, but, you know, if we've seen, well, I'm going to quote him a lot, I'm sure, or refer to him a lot, but it's Holiness the Dalai Lama, who for me just completely embodies all of these qualities all the time. And shows what they look like in real life. You know, they're not out of reach, they're not holier than thou, they're not something cosmic. They, you know, the way that they appear in everyday life, when you see them being embodied by somebody who seems to really to really be there, makes you think, okay, yeah, no, that's worthwhile. And that, you know, it may well be doable, actually, I find. I don't know, so you'd be interested to know how you find it. They're also known, there are two different ways of, or different traditions of presenting the four immeasurable thoughts, actually. There's the tradition that I'm more familiar with, Sanso, maybe you are as well, but the Tibetan tradition, the Mahayana tradition, which I know through the Tibetan tradition. And there, it's very much, the teachings are very much set in the context of, if we want to become, if we want to relieve all sentient beings from their suffering, in order to do that, we need to become enlightened, and these are the qualities that we need to develop. And in fact, they're not so often taught. They haven't been in my experience in this particular package within this tradition. Individually, there are teachings on love, great love, compassion, great compassion, rejoicing, and equanimity from a particular point of view. Not so often. They do exist, but not so often, you know, as a package of the four immeasurables, except as the prayer, the aspiration to begin with. And then there's the tradition which comes from, which is called, the Pali tradition, which comes from those schools of Buddhism which are based more particularly on the Pali suttas of the Buddha's teachings. And within that tradition, it's actually a much more, to my mind, a much more immediately accessible and experiential way of going about things that is a really helpful kind of alternative view, kind of, you know, the two views I found in my experience kind of support each other. Anyway, in that tradition, they're also known as the four divine abodes, implying, you know, there are states of mind, still states of mind and heart, that we can develop and become so, if we kind of work with them on a regular basis, we can become so familiar with them, so habituated to them, that they actually become who we are, how we are. That is, so we are always, our mind is always resting in either immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy and equanimity. Which sounds great, actually, doesn't it? You know, so, you know, we kind of know, you know, we can also, I was just thinking last night, you know, we can choose, consciously choose, this is what the teachings are saying to us, we can consciously choose to habituate our mind so that we are spontaneously feeling either love, compassion, and so forth, because that's all spontaneously means, you know, it's something that we are so familiar with that that we express it without thinking about it. It happens. Or, you know, and yet oftentimes we choose to, you know, to reside in more hellish abodes, you know, states of anxiety, of fear, of resentment, and things like that, which also we can, you know, if we're not careful, if we're not conscious, we can become so familiar with that those are the states of mind that predominate. And we know, you know, from the limited experience that we have, even not even thinking about a spiritual path, but, you know, on days when, you know, we've had a really good night's sleep, we kind of wake up sun shining, and we're automatically, generally, in a positive state of mind, then actually, you know, we feel more joyful, we feel lighter, more, we have more energy, we are nicer to be around. Generally, things go better because we're responding better to people and situations rather than just reacting. And compare those, you know, those sort of, you know, slightly divine states to the days when, you know, we haven't had enough sleep and everyone and everything is irritating and in our way, and it's, you know, we're sort of surrounded by a dark cloud of gloom. We have the choice. It's not always easy to do, but we do have the choice, according to Buddhism, Buddhist teachings, of how we live our life. And, you know, as many of you said in the introduction, you know, we've chosen to live a life, to try and live a life, to train ourselves to begin this process or to continue this process of habituating our mind with these positive states and other positive states. But these are four that have been found to work particularly well together. As I say, we can practice them individually, and actually, you know, as we're learning in them, we do. But what I've become really convinced of and inspired by in doing the research for this topic is that how they are, their real strength lies in being in a complete, well-balanced, integrated system. That, you know, if we take them one by one, or if we focus just on one or the other, which we can do, but there are times when we might go too far or get too embroiled or just go astray slightly. But if we know of the four of them together and how they work together, then we can, they're very balanced. We can use one to balance another's. We'll show, as I hope to sort of show sort of throughout the teachings. So if, for example, we get too heavily into compassion, and actually we go slightly astray and it really brings us down, and we find ourselves, you know, not being able to move, being stuck in what's sometimes called compassion fatigue as well, if we just wear ourselves out, then we know from our familiarity with these topics that to counterbalance that, we can work on joy. We can put compassion to one side for a moment, and we can consciously use the skills we have to rejoice in the positive things that are going on in the world, in the positive qualities that we have, that other people have, that we know of, and we can bring our minds up again. And so there is this incredible, wonderful, you know, sort of well, tightly knit, balanced system, I think. And they're usually taught, certainly within the Pali approach, on very much on the basis of mindfulness. And of course, we'll need, you know, sort of self-awareness to be conscious of our states of mind in order to be able to work on them, to develop them. So, you know, they can be these four aspects, as well as mindfulness, can be the practice of a lifetime and can take us, you know, as far as we want to go, I think, in our Buddhist path. It's all there. So I think that's all I wanted to say in terms, there's a bit more in terms of the practice, how we go about. So that's kind of the background, my understanding of the background. But we'll have, you know, I hope we'll be able to discuss later on and hear from you and your understanding of them. But we have these qualities already. They're not unfamiliar to us. We know joy. We know happiness, we know love and kindness, we know compassion, we know balance, you know, these exist in our mind already and in our lives. But so far, our experiences tends to be limited. We can wish, as I said, we can wish happiness for some people, but not others. So it's a matter of stretching. We can do it on a good day, but not on a bad day. It's a matter of gradually growing. And it is a gradual process, and it's a very gentle process. We're talking about doing this for all sentient beings. We are a sentient being as well. We're included within that. So as well as cultivating compassion, joy, loving kindness for other people, and balance, we are cultivating it also for ourselves. There's a really good case for saying that if we don't do it for ourselves, it's limited, certainly, how much we can do it for other people. We can work in, a lot of the work happens in meditation. That's where we can make a start and really help begin the familiarity. So we meditate on love and compassion and so on. When we do so, we're advised to work with real people and real situations, take individuals, rather than just an amorphous, you know, I love the world, because that can tend to be a bit superficial. So we work with real people, and we try to be aware of the real feelings and understandings that are coming up. But we use our judgment, particularly when we come to the difficult people. We don't start with people who are way beyond our ability. We take ourselves gently. So, you know, if there are people in our lives or in the world who we find totally abhorrent and, you know, kind of we freak out, we don't start with those. We start with gentler people, with people who mildly irritate us, or, you know, who just get on our nerves, or, you know, something happened, but it was way back. So let's try and heal the situation now within our capabilities. We take it slowly. And if at any point in any of the meditations or any of the processes, we find ourselves getting upset or agitated, then we take a step back and we can concentrate on our breath. And we can just give ourselves a bit of compassion, a bit of loving kindness. We can just, you know, take a step back and then either try again or choose somebody else or stay with the breath. Up to us. But, you know, we're responsible for our own mental development. And, you know, we practice, as I said, first on ourselves by being kind, compassionate and joyful ourselves. So, and it is a rigorous and a very precise presentation. So there are various stages we go through in each one. And as I say, I think we can have real confidence in the presentation. So we'll begin to explore how we as individuals can grow in kindness, compassion, wisdom, and joy. And what we, by this process, what we as individuals can bring to the world. Why bother? Why give up our weekend to do that? Well, in the short term, there are mental and physical benefits that have been, I'm sure you've come across, but, you know, in terms of being more relaxed, that has obviously a great mental benefits on our minds. And they in turn have great, as we're more relaxed and gentle and open, then physically that translates into physical benefits as well. And there's all sorts of research being done now on the benefits of this, I'm sure you know. In the longer term, I'm going to share a quote with you from the Dalai Lama, but basically, as we all are increasingly aware, we share this planet. We share this planet, our only home. And so actually we need to do this. Whatever actions we may take in the world, whether it's helping out our neighbours, helping in the local community, donating to good causes, or political action or whatever, the best and the first offering we can give is to work on ourselves, so that whatever we do, whatever we take out into the world, comes from the best possible place that we can. So I'm not saying we don't take action, of course we do, but you know, as the Dalai Lama said in another thing, you know, that working on compassion in particular, but any of these together, is the bedrock of any other revolution. So he was calling for a revolution of compassion, the mother of all revolutions. It's the bedrock on which any other, you know, sort of social, you know, sort of scientific or whatever, any other revolution should be based on. So I'll just give a quote from his, and then a very short, how are we doing for time? Okay. A very short introduction to equanimity. And we'll go into a meditation then before the break, if that's okay. So the Dalai Lama says, in today's world, we are all interconnected. The challenges that face us and that will face future generations require cooperation across national, ethnic, and religious boundaries. We must see each other not as adversaries or competitors for limited resources, but as brothers and sisters living together on the only planet we call home. Therefore, we need a new, up-to-date way of thinking, one that acknowledges our interdependence and the necessity of resolving problems and instigating change through dialogue and collaboration. Our compassion cannot be limited only to those who look like us or who share our citizenship or religion. It must be extended to encompass everyone on the basis of our common humanity. So that's why, we're working to extend what we have, because, you know, we all know we have to get on with everybody, basically, and in some way find some way of coexisting. So I'll stop talking soon, I promise. But basically, to start with, this is certainly from the Mahayana approach or the Tibetan approach that I'm familiar with. We start with equanimity here in order to level the field. A quote from Alan Wallace on this, if a farmer's field is sloping in one side and we water it, we don't want all the water to go down one side, leaving the other side dry. It needs to be level, so that everybody, you know, we can try to do our best for everybody, basically. And we're moving from those categories of people we like and need and want to be with, all the way through to people that we don't like and want to be with. And we reckon that we do, one way in is to recognize this basic common humanity, that we all are the same in wanting to be happy and to be free from problems and difficulties and suffering. That's something we all share, even, you know, the worst dictator, actually. Clearly, we have different ways of going about it and understanding it, and not all ways are equally, you know, good or praiseworthy. But basically, we all have this in common, our common humanity. But we're not talking here about an aloof or cold indifference, but actually a warm and open-hearted respect for others, regardless of you know, their backgrounds, their gender, their nationality, even their behaviour, actually. And this, again, is where I see the Dalai Lama as a great exemplar of this in action, in his, you know, his just going about the world. And he's equally open to cleaners in the hotels that he stays in, to world leaders and, you know, family members as well. So enough of that. Let's start with a meditation, if that's okay. So we'll do that up until the break. Not very long. Break might be about just after 11, about 10 past 11. So I'm guessing you've all meditated before, so you will know to sit in a posture that is upright and supportive of meditation and comfortable, but also relaxed. And we'll focus first of all on the breathing. So to begin, get a sense of settling into the body, being supported by the ground. Actually, I meant to do this at the beginning, but I forgot. But it's good to remind ourselves of our own motivation for being here, in particular today, but also in general, for wanting to develop these qualities of heart and mind in our own life. So it seems like you're familiar with the longer version of this prayer. I'll start with the first line of it. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity, unaffected by attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So I'd like you to maybe bring to mind, what we're going to do is actively imagine how that might be. So I'd like you to call to mind a particular situation in the world, present or in the past, of conflict or war, where there's abuse of power or corruption, or even just stupidity or ignorance. Say, for example, Palestine or Afghanistan. The Polish Belarusian border or the English Channel. Our corridors of power in Westminster. It's not important which, but one will probably come to mind more strongly or any other that you're aware of. Where conflict born of this ignorance presides. Maybe images come to mind or words or just a feeling. There'll be images or words of suffering and difficulty of innocent people whose lives have been overturned. It's historical, like the slave ships or Nazi concentration camps. It seems there's sometimes no limit to our inhumanity. So, as I say, try to choose one situation that speaks to you at this moment and stay with it. As long as you can without becoming too distressed. Recognizing the futility, various complicated causes and conditions that come together to create the situation. The difficulties both in the present and in the future that come from this, as this situation has come from roots probably way back in the past. Now we're going to try to imagine in the world, and particularly the situation that you're thinking of, that there are no divisions or conflicts born of this attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. No place for war, but where people do resolve their problems and instigate change through dialogue and collaboration, working on what's the best for everyone concerned. Really try to get a sense or images of this happening, whether you believe it's possible or not. We know that before anything becomes a reality, it needs to be imagined or conceptualized. From the humble pencil to the space rocket, the most amazing space rocket. They all began by being a concept in somebody's mind. Not all concepts become a reality, but all realities start as concepts. So let's feed our energy into just imagining how this particular situation could be improved, imagining that it is improved. Bring to it all your creativity and awareness of what would be needed in the short term and in the long term for this situation of conflict, war, corruption, whatever, to be resolved. For the world to abide in peace. Maybe with each step along the way, feel a lightening in your heart and mind, feel them becoming lighter. And begin to rejoice, recognizing and calling on the positivity that also exists in the world, and rejoicing in that. We know that as well as terrible, inhumane situations, there are also countless acts of kindness, courage, compassion. Which of those would be necessary? Bring them into your imagining and then rejoice that they also exist. And gradually bring your attention back to your breath and your breathing. Let the situation go, but try to end on a feeling of being positive, positive. Okay, so it's probably a good time to have a break. When we come back from the break, we can start with a bit of a discussion. I think that might be a good place to do it. And then I'll give a bit more of a talk about equanimity. but probably you all seem very experienced, so maybe I don't need to do too much talking, so let's see how we go with that.